Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another edition of On Mic with Jordan Rich, where conversation is alive and well with creative people who have a lot to say and a lot to offer. Today's guest is Glenn Court. He's written a book called Letters to Mikey, Messages of Hope and Optimism for Young Americans. You'll learn how Glenn, a former prosecuting attorney, civil litigator, and successful business entrepreneur, dedicated himself to researching and presenting the wisdom of leading figures throughout history, ideas that have served to frame us effectively for millennia. Glenn felt, as many of us do, that these ideas need to be reintroduced to today's generation, the young people, many of whom are dispirited. Today's story is about a dad on a mission. So let's welcome him, Glenn Court, to join us now on Mic. Love the whole concept here, Glenn, not just a letter or a note, but an entire book dedicated to your son, but really dedicated to all the young people out there who could use the help. Let us in on what was that thing that drove you to do this, that epiphany, if you will.
Thank you, Jordan. And again, thank you so much for having me here. Yeah, about 3.5 years ago, I started having a series of epiphanies, I would call them. I was asked to do some teaching in the inner city schools of Boston, And at that time, it was there was a nonprofit that was teamed up with the city of Boston to teach kids, high school seniors, give them a gap year and help them really become involved in the new digital economy, if you will.
Sure.
So our business at that time was known for advancements in construction techniques. And so I was there to actually teach them about modern construction techniques. We were in a business called Modular Construction. Fast forward a couple weeks, a couple months, they did an unbelievable job of giving me these tools and these. I teamed up with an architect and we sat in front of these children. And, well, they weren't really children, you know, they're high school seniors. But they came in and, Jordan, when I tell you that they were beside themselves, they weren't prepared in any sense of the word to engage in the materials because there was so much going on in their lives. Mm. I couldn't believe I was trying to make personal relationships with them and trying to help them, you know, gather their books and come to class on time, trying to understand their names and where they came from. You know, I was really excited to be a teacher, you know, and even a mentor and a coach. It was unbelievable to me at that time. They were so unable to engage in the material, and they were shaking their heads, many of them left and right, saying, you know, Mr. Court, this world is just so messed up. They had this look of fed-upness on their face,
angst,
on their faces,
right.
Anxiety.
Yeah.
But it was like fed-upness, you know. Mm. A couple of them were, you know, a couple of them would sleep and, you know, sleep through class. And I would go over and say, hey, you know, how you doing? You know, can we help you in any way? And again, they would just say, look, you know, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but
right.
I can't even get involved with this class. And it was much more than just the fact that they were from the inner city schools. I was seeing this amongst Mikey's friends.
Mm.
I was seeing this lack of hope, this lack of optimism for America, and this lack of trust in adults. And there was just this noise and confusion, this
right.
general noise and confusion. I'm telling you, it was like it came into the classroom. It was like it was in the classroom and it dominated our classroom.
Combination of cynicism, apathy, anxiety, all the terrible things that we try to avoid and try to buffer our children from their being affected by it. And the subtitle is Messages of Hope and Optimism for Young Americans. So you took it upon yourself to dig in and do some research. Tell us a little bit about that, because a lot of this is based on tried and true, quote unquote, philosophy.
Man, we have so many reasons to be hopeful and optimistic. When I went to research, I was so freaked out myself, there you go, about what we were experiencing. I had to find out for myself what was happening. I was never a reader. You know, I really wasn't a reader. I had put my head down and went into this business, and I tried my best. You know, 28 years I was in this business, and all I really worried about when I was in the business is the business.
That's
I tried to understand.
Logical.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed logical at the time.
Right.
You know,
right,
but
right.
when you know, my head was so down and I was so focused on just, okay, I'm in this business, you know, this modular construction business. Let's become an expert in modular construction. And so, you know, I thought that was all that mattered for me for 28 years. I hadn't been to the library. I had not been to the library since high school. So when I had this experience in the high school, you know, in teaching these kids in the Boston City schools, and then Mikey's birthday came around in July and I sat down to write him this birthday card, I didn't know what to say to him. I had lost all bearings almost as a parent as to give him hope and optimism. Because his friends and the kids in the high school, it didn't matter what community. It didn't matter whether or not we were in the wealthy suburbs of Weston and Wellesley in that area or whether or not we were in the city of Boston. All the kids were telling me the same thing. And the younger kids were even worse. Mikey's nephews and nieces, I mentioned to Mikey's niece, when you think of the word government, you know, what do you think about? And her words were anger, despair, disgust, hate. I mean, all the kids I spoke with, none of them were like, you know, our government's pretty good, and, you know, and I want to get into civics, and, you know, I really appreciate civics, and I appreciate the presidency, and none of them. I mean, I spoke to, you know, 30 or 40 of Mikey's friends, and then, again, you know, speaking to the inner city kids, and it was just this, I was having an epiphany that something is really wrong. Something has gone off the rails,
right.
And I didn't know what it was, and that's why, I think you might have asked me, that's why I went to the library. I didn't know where else to go.
Children, since the beginning of time, are basically sponges. You know, they live off the environment and whatever they soak in, and I know you're right about this, and you're concerned about this, as many of us are. The bombardment of, you might call nasty media, that's a euphemism for what it really is incessant, and these kids are swept up in this, I mean, like never before. I mean,
They're sponging up our lowest moments.
Right, the lowest common denominators, yeah, exactly.
We are becoming a society of our lowest possible moments. It's amazing because all human beings are entitled to these low moments. I don't really blame anyone who's not in the public eye for having low moments. I recently wrote I've been on Substack recently trying to be more brief about my messages. And one of them was about this particular topic. We have our temporary low moments as human beings, which is, you know, it's understandable because we're human. But the problem is our leadership. These kids are literally watching now our legislators and our elected leaders. And they're taking these same temporary moment, you know, momentary lapses, right? Where their emotional brainstem is asking them to say, you know, hey, shut up. We don't say, hey, shut up and interrupt, you know, another legislator when they're talking. At that level, there's a way to communicate. And these kids are now learning that we're basically normalizing our lowest emotional moments. And to fight through those emotions, what we talk about in the book, it's not easy. It's not easy to fight through our emotions. It's not easy to become not uncaring. There's so many people out there that are suffering with either poverty or trauma or childhood trauma. And it's so easy, even as we get, I write in the book, when we get into our 20s and 30s, and, you know, we're 35 and 40 years old, we figure, hey, you know, life has dished me what it's going to dish me. I am who I am. And it's really easy for people to become uncaring. We can't blame those people who are having their temporary lapses, but we need to do something about it. We need to recognize that these temporary lapses are really demonstrating to our kids how it is okay to behave when it's really not okay to behave that way.
There are so many allusions in the book and in the work you're doing, the golden rule, the Bible, faith, no matter how you define it, as well as the work and words of the founding fathers, the Constitution, these documents, whether they be biblical or governmental, that set a code, a pattern. It's a shame that so many people, including the very smart adults that should know better, are not paying any attention to these.
Oh, man. It is amazing how the messages are so consistent. So take it from a guy who didn't go to the library for 20 years. I went back to the library and I started with philosophy. I started with the old stuff, you know, and I had the opportunity, as you might know, to actually get out of that business. And I, you know, we had an opportunity to sell the business and I found myself with all this time, which was sort of serendipitous. I mean, I didn't really see that coming. And all of a sudden I had all this time. Went to the library. The people in my local library, literally, there's a couple people in there that thought I was nuts because I showed up every day. They had never seen me before. And Jordan, it didn't matter where I was in the library. It didn't matter whether or not I was in history or American history or philosophy or religion. They all the messages were extremely consistent, as you say, from all the authors, whether or not it was Aristotle, you know, for over 2,000 years, held his belief system for 2,000 years. That's a pretty good run. You know, Plato before him, and but Aristotle was a major influence. And then I came across a guy named Marcus Cicero. Just amazing. I mean, I'm hoping you can shut me off because I don't want to start quoting Cicero here, but I will.
Feel free. Indulge yourself.
Oh, man. There is, where do I go from Cicero's quotes to Stoic philosophy? I started picking up the books, and importantly, Jordan, at least I was smart enough to know to curate the books on my website, because I'm not smart enough here to tell you all the amazing things that all these authors said.
That's okay.
I started to curate the books that were really not only amazing to me, but they were sending me this message. The consistency in the messages that you will find, if anyone goes to the library, if we will only go there. And just remember, this is coming from a guy that hadn't been there in 20 years. I'm saying that if we can possibly get our kids and get, you know, certain adults that may be starting to lose their way, and these include people who are suffering in many different ways, we need to support. How is it possible that people going through so much can retain this positive spirit in their lives? It's very, very hard for people to retain a positive purpose in their life when going through hard times. What I'm ultimately trying to say is that the messages in these books in the library are so powerful. When I came across the natural law, and the natural laws are written in so many different ways, and they're being our founding fathers, you mentioned, all of them believed in nature's laws.
Right. They were deists, and many of them. And you have Franklin in the book, Ben Franklin, who was, I've read a lot of biographies of Ben Franklin. Yeah. He's an amazing figure, as we know. Just some of his simple rules of living.
Oh, man.
If we could just bring those out to the forefront as you're doing now, that would be a good start.
You mentioned Ben Franklin. What about JFK? And what about Martin Luther King? And what about Dwight Eisenhower? What about Ronald Reagan? What about Barack Obama? The list goes on and on and on and on. I wish I was sharp enough with you right here. I pray sometimes that I was sharp enough to get this message across, that if there are hundreds and thousands of people that are all saying the same thing. Now, I hope maybe the follow-up question is, well, Glenn, you know, what is this same thing?
Let's take that one, because I wanted to get to the nub of the messaging and then explain to the audience what your goal is to bring it forth to help people. The messaging, I think we alluded to the fact that it's golden rule based, but there's more than that. Yeah. So feel free to fill us in.
Well, it's so huge that I often worry about, you know, who am I to bring it forward? And that's why I've written the book. That's why I curated all the resources. I see myself as a lucky person, really blessed person, who had the opportunity to curate all of the information that I was able to find. Ben, you mentioned Ben Franklin. If you were to read all of Ben Franklin's stuff, and also George Washington, and also Thomas Jefferson, and Alexander Hamilton, and you go back, and then on the other side, these just don't have to be. You know, you run into these barriers of belief. You know, these people were all white men, right? If you keep reading, you learn the truth about what they really thought about slavery. You know, they were all abolitionists for the most part. I mean, I don't want to digress into slavery right now. It's a touchy topic. But the idea being that if you keep reading and you read about Frederick Douglass and you read about Martin Luther King, if you read and read and read, you will ultimately see that they all believed in the same thing. They did believe in love and kindness and compassion and all that touchy-feely stuff. And the touchy-feely stuff that connects with something in the universe. It doesn't need to be God. I happen to believe in God. I happen to believe in God, but you don't need to believe in God to really understand the natural laws, to understand that there is I guess here we go again. I'm into the natural laws. I better be able to tell you what they
are. Well, I think rather than go deep into that, let's pull out some examples of life as we know it today that you use. You talk about Uncle aunt, you know, characters that you've drawn up that are very recognizable. They're not even stereotypes because we all know them at the Thanksgiving table.
Yeah.
But those that are so dug in on their positions, on their heels, that there's never a chance for any compromise. And one of the questions that comes up often is, if people just listened, wouldn't they get to live a better life? If you just stopped and listened to what the other person was saying or hoping or dreaming.
I think it's just really important, really, really important that we don't blame anybody for what's happening in our own lives and in society. There is really, that's been the biggest problem, that we're all finger pointing. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give us a life raft. And what I guess, and if I can try to get this out, is that arrogance. So, Jordan, if nature says that above all else, like Mother Nature, human beings and all things were created by the same singular creator. If we start there, if we just say that Mother Nature, like human beings and all things, were created by some creator, mm-hmm. because no one knows how we were created. So I figure we can start there. A lot of people would agree that there's something larger than ourselves. And I think that's a good place. That's the life raft, kind of this belief system that we're starting with. If you look at nature and you think that we're all created by one, the same creator, right? How is it that human beings should be any less extraordinary than Mother Nature herself? So let's think about that for a second. How is it that human beings should be any less extraordinary than Mother Nature herself? Most people would agree, when standing in Mother Nature or observing Mother Nature, whatever it be, the grass, the rocks, the coral reefs, the tempestuous storms, whatever it is, most people think, wow, they wouldn't call Mother Nature ordinary, right? I don't think. I mean, most people would say, wow, that's an extraordinary force. So let me finish my point.
Sure.
Human beings were also meant to be extraordinary. And the other thing humans being, so we weren't meant to be ordinary. So I'm trying to tie in this, and this is, by the way, not me speaking. This is the thousands and thousands of the books I've read in the library. These are what all the books and the Ciceros and the Platos and the Aristotles and the JFKs and the MLKs and all of the people that you revere. I mean, I wish I could, again, the list is a long one. I mean, Mother Teresa, the Dalai Lama.
Oh, they're
endless. I mean, from all cultures. I mean, if you look at the African culture, if you look at Indian culture, if you look at Muslim culture, if you look at all these cultures, most of the world's religions are all founded on the same belief system. If we are really reading and if we're paying attention, I have trouble, and I see you're trying to interrupt me here, but there's something important about this idea that we were meant to be extraordinary, because what we're doing is we're acting ordinary.
You know,
we're not moving beyond our ordinary.
This is what I wanted to touch on when you're talking about that, particularly the messaging to young people. The self-esteem, the sense of I have control and I have a destiny and I have all this, has been robbed for so many. It's that sense of apathy we talked about earlier. Agree with you, if we consider ourselves unique and extraordinary and have the abilities that the creator, whatever you want to call it, gave us, we can throw off the shackles of apathy and cynicism, perhaps. I agree with you.
So well said.
Yeah.
There's really no... I know when people make absolute statements, it's kind of repulsive. You know, people don't like anyone who makes absolute statements. The only absolute statements I'm making in the book and on my, you know, if I ever have my own podcast or on my Substack, in my Substack writing, is that all of the over 2,600 years, you know, all these bright, brilliant people and all the churches and all the synagogues and all the mosques and all the places of religion we're visiting, they do believe in the ultimate goodness. I think Cicero said that man was given a special dispensation for reason. We were given a special dispensation for reason. I wanted to get to one other thing about natural law. It has to do with humility. What I found in the writings over and over again is that nature, when most people are standing in nature, they look out and they say, wow, this is awe-inspiring, right? This is
humbling.
Humbling, thank you.
Yeah.
This is humbling. This is larger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are humbled by that. And when you look at the people on the far left and the far right creating all the noise, they're just not able to say, hey, let's slow down and really try to reach each other, because ultimately, we can trust each other. So we talked about the goodness of people. If we could only believe that in the goodness of people and then understand the violation we're making in being arrogant, we tie that to nature's rules. And it's not just me again talking about nature's rules, Jordan. This isn't me. This isn't Glenn Court. This is hundreds and thousands of all of the people who are writing and reading. And what if you believe in nature's laws, they said all you need to do is seek wisdom. The philosophers all said, seek wisdom, seek virtue, continue to learn, apply your higher gifts, right? Apply your higher gifts to retain virtue in yourself. Step two, that virtue you gain was meant to be shared with other creatures because we're all. So those are the two or three connecting points that I've tried to make, and it's hard to verbalize them to you.
No, you're doing great. Not only are you doing something that is the right thing to do, but it's actually a very beneficial thing to do in your own life. When you give, you get back. It's an old expression, right? Give and get back.
Absolutely.
And that's what, when I see young people volunteering on a weekend, washing cars to raise money for the boys' clubs, I mean, when I see anything like that, I'm inspired, you know, and I think a lot of times we don't talk about the good news as much as we should. The other thing I wanted to bring up, there's a chapter dealing with myth and the evil myths and so forth. I'm sure you're familiar with Joseph Campbell, the great philosopher who talked about myth. That seems to be something that's very much out of control. People believe what they hear, what a meme indicates, so quickly now because we've lost faith and trust in the truth and in media and so forth. What can we do about those horrible myths that are developed and conspiracy theories and all this other stuff? How do we defend against that?
Many steps involved with that, but I'll try to give you my feeling on that. It goes back to trying to have this outlet belief system, which means that all we're asking young people to believe is that we are ultimately good. For all of our flaws, we are ultimately good. And what I want to ask people now, and what keeps me glued to this work now, Jordan, is that, you know, you mentioned, give and get back, and it's better to give to receive and all those things. And you're right about that. But what's happening is we have millions and millions of really smart people. For example, the TED Talks, for example, amazing platform. Mm. Some of the smartest people in the world are giving TED Talks. Mm. I watch them all the time. They're all saying very similar things about they're encouraging people to be good, to love, to have compassion, have kindness, right? All these things that we, you know, the power of gratitude. But what I hope to point out is it's something's missing. How is it that 90%, and I really believe it's 90%, how is it that your friends are all walking into your house, and why is it that they're walking into your house and they're shaking their head and they're saying, Jordan, God, why do we have so much war? I mean, this world is really messed up, right? Mm. Why is it that we're 90% of the people you meet and you have coffee with and you can look around and everyone's thinking the same thing?
Yeah.
You hear them talking about our national politics. You hear them talking about how embarrassed they are about our national politics.
What is it, 75% of the people think we're heading in the wrong direction as a country?
That's terrible.
And
I would say that it's so my I kind of kid around about this with my friends and family. I literally think 90% of us, we know there's a better way. We know there's something missing. So you talk about myths. What we're missing is human nature, right? And you have to couple this by not blaming anybody. This is where we take the slide. This is where we allow about 10% of the people who lose their way, who become detached from what I'm calling those important natural laws that have been established for 2,600 years. And not only that, Jordan, not only are they the laws established for 2,600 years, in the last 50 years, if you look up the reading of Dr. Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, one of my heroes, I hope that this podcast can potentially make it to the air. And if one thing happens, I want to thank Jonathan Haidt for being in my life. He doesn't even know me. He's an absolute hero, and his work over the course of 30 years has changed my life. I can mention two or three other people in that category, and again, all these resources is how I wrote my book. I wrote my book given the information that Dr. Jonathan Haidt instilled in my mind. Mm-hmm. There's another author, and you probably know him, and a writer for the New York Times, David Brooks.
Of course, yes.
David Brooks's book, Road to Character. When you read that book, the first thing that struck me is that David Brooks is brilliant. And what when I was reading The Natural Law, Jordan, what does Natural Law 101 say? What is Natural Law 101 says that humans have the ability to reason. We have the ability to grow and develop like no other animal in the world. And you see that. You see that all over the place. So these are the guys, when I read their books and I connected what I was reading about natural law and then connected my own life experience, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I know this is a long answer to what you're saying. I wrote an article on my Substack to all my heroes, which included, you know, Mr. Brooks and Dr. Haidt. And I even mentioned Dale Carnegie.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Dale Carnegie, if you read his book, life changer. Mm. So if all we could do is get this information into the hands of our children, that they're amazing and that there is a path, what happens is that a small percentage of us come off the path. And we certainly cannot blame those people for coming off the path because it's very easy. Here it is. It's hard to stay on the path, but because humans are so amazing, 90% of us do, but about 10% of us fall off that, but we become detached. And therefore, we take that slide and what do we start doing? We start pulling everyone down with us.
One of the biggest issues, I think, in our culture today is the sense of separation of groups, tribalism, putting people into groups, whether they be racial or religious or ethnic or whatever. And also the issue of victimhood. And we sort of teased that early on, you know, that everyone feels victimized or people are told they're victims and they're told to believe that. And I know your book addresses both of those things. It addresses certainly the separation of people based on their skin color, based on their economic, you know, place in life, et cetera. This is a big issue that has been sort of eroding, I think, for the last several generations.
Well, in the last 50 years, I was lucky enough to go to the library and read all sorts of things, right? And we talked about my reading on philosophy and you know, my beliefs on natural law and that we are ultimately extraordinary people. We're meant to move beyond our ordinary. It's very important that we understand what ordinary looks like. And what I'm hoping is that people do know what ordinary looks like. So we talked a little bit about our leaders and how they're behaving in ordinary fashion. That doesn't make them bad people necessarily. They're just not moving beyond their ordinary. And I guess when we define the word ordinary, we tie in nature's laws again by importantly pointing out that arrogance is an ordinary feature of human beings. There are many ordinary, there's a litany of ordinary features within human beings. Mm-hmm. Anxiety, obviously, you see, you know,
hubris. Hubris would be one.
Hubris, excessive. David Brooks writes about excessive pride. It's in my book. I quote him in my book. He writes a paragraph about pride. It literally made me cry. Mm. I mean, if you look at what's happening in our own families, tearing apart family relationships and friend relationships, it's blind certainty, it's self-righteousness, it's extremism, it's narcissism, all these things. But here's the deal. We cannot blame these people for taking the slide. So what is this? How do we deal with this? We know so much. We know that 10%, about 10% are few people. And many of them, let's say they're impoverished. Let's say they've suffered childhood, you know, adverse consequences, and they get resentful. I mean, I have people in my own life that are extremely, Glenn, I don't have time to think about my neighbor. I'm trying to put food on my table. Don't call me. Well, you know, this whole thing, you know, on this white privilege language, you know, and, you know, that's a whole nother topic. But what I deal with in my life is, you know, Glenn, you're talking about having me be more kind and compassionate for the people who don't have in this world, right? And talking about kindness and compassion and love. But, you know, they get so self-righteous about, well, you know, I'm being beat over the head with all this cultural stuff. You know, I'm not privileged. I'm trying to, you know, and they, you know, they're not, it doesn't make them racists. But we have to, both sides have grown arrogant.
Yeah, you have to give. There's got to be some give and take, because it works so much. Life works so much better when you have give and take in a family and a business. You ran a business for nearly 30 years, and you realize it's not always your way. Sometimes it's their way. There's so much here that we could delve into, but I want to close with this, and I'm going to make a statement and see if you agree with me. Glenn Court is ultimately an optimist.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So define your definition of optimism based on the writings here and based on your research and based on the understanding of where we are and where we can go. Because I'm a cockeyed optimist myself, to quote the song.
If we give kids every reason to be hopeful and optimistic, everything will flow from there. If we can get out of our own way, if we can get the left and the right to start understanding just this, let's give our kids every reason to be hopeful and optimistic. Everything will flow from there. Everything will flow from there. Because they will find, if people read, if we just get back to the library as I did, I hadn't been there in 28 years. I'm not an elitist. I'm not a person. I'm not an educated person talking to uneducated people. What I'm saying is that I found in the library all of the reasons for hope and optimism. They all exist. The only problem is we need to read. We need to get to we need these kids to read the letters. If we look back at Thomas Paine, if we look back at the basics, Ben Franklin, they will find that everyone was saying the same thing. That, Jordan, was my epiphany. And for my wife, who may be listening, you know, she says, Glenn, you know, you can't just run with hope and optimism. And, it's, you know, a lot of people are suffering and, you know, they don't want to hear your hope and optimism speech. And I said, you know, Brooke, I have to be true to myself. When you piece together the puzzle, when you piece it all together and connect all the dots of all this ancient philosophy and modern science, because the modern science of how our brains work, if we don't stay hopeful and optimistic, if we don't have a growth mindset, just quoting Carol Dweck, if we don't continue to make personal connections, quoting Robert Waldinger from, you know, the Cambridge study, the happiness study at Harvard, there are ABCs. And we are, for whatever reason, Jordan, we're not following the ABCs. But they're out there. They're out there. The ABCs are out there. Some of them can be found on my book.
I was going to say, they're actually in there, there being the book. Yeah. You've done it great service by putting all of these things that you've researched together in a very readable fashion in a book called Letters to Mikey. What's the website that you'd like to send people to as well?
Oh, I started curating all the resources of all the amazing philosophers that have changed my life on a website a few years ago. I changed the name a few times, but now the name is Getting Along. It's very basic. It's gettingalong.com. www.gettingalong.com.
I think we can handle that. I like the sentiment very, very much. And I do believe you're a voice that is going to be heard more and more, and you're on a mission, a good mission. And it's a simple mission. You can change a life in the parking lot at McDonald's just by being kind and by helping somebody or by helping your own family members. Glenn, thank you so much. You did great. I really appreciate you stopping by, and I wish you the very, very best, because we're all in this together.
I can't thank you enough. Your voice is wonderful, and having gotten to know you, Jordan, you're a really special guy. Really special guy. I really appreciate you having me in.
My pleasure.
Glenn Court, the book Letters to Mikey, Messages of Hope and Optimism for Young Americans. Perfect time for a book like this. Do check it out. And thanks for checking out the podcast as always. Go to my website, jordanrich.com or chartproductions.com to find out more. Certainly appreciate you subscribing and downloading, and those 5-star reviews mean a lot. Till next time, this is JR saying as always, be well so you can do good. Take care.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.